We're back to Neil Haley Show, and I'm first excited to welcome my co-host, David Hollenbeck of Hollenbeck Leadership. David, how are you? And we're talking to, again, former cowboy and also Believe podcaster, Jesse Hawley. Jesse, thanks for stopping by, man. And let's go right into the beginning and about, did you always want to be a professional football player, Jesse?
No, I didn't. Football, not even my first love. Basketball is my first love. It's what attracted me to sports. It gave me my first kind of feeling of a team. And it was really the first time in my life that I wanted to be a part of something in a positive manner was when I first found basketball in the sixth grade. And that happened on a whim. I was literally roaming the streets and a friend of mine came by on a bike and was like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "Nothing." He's like, "Well, come on, get on the bike. Let's go. I'm about to go to practice." And I went and they had nine guys and needed the 10th. And I played. I was like, I kind of like this. And I had a little attitude at first, but I knew that one day I wanted to do something in the professional athletic realm. Never thought it was going to be football. I didn't like contact. I didn't like to be hit. I didn't like to hit anyone in that type of manner. So the fact that football turned out to be the life-changing thing for me is ironic, but I'm so thankful for it.
Go ahead, David.
No, I'm curious if you did play basketball in high school, college, and all that. Do you think it would have taken you away from football?
Yeah, I did play basketball in high school and college.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I was pretty good. I was pretty good in basketball as well. I was an All-American in two sports in high school. Wow. And had scholarship offers to go just about anywhere I wanted in the country. Played 2 years at North Carolina basketball. I was a backup guard there, won a national championship in 2005. But by that time, I had realized my team had four lottery picks on it. We had the number 2 pick, 5 pick, 10 pick, and a 13th pick. And from there, I was kind of like, this is old school basketball. This was like traditional point guard, traditional 2, traditional 3, traditional 4, traditional 5, not what we have today. So back then I was like, man, there's 15 roster spots. There's 2 point guards, 2 shooting guards. And I wasn't a prolific scorer enough to be a shooting guard at 6'3". In that era, I was like, but football over here, I'm kind of good at this. And I had a better chance of probably making it professionally. Because I didn't want to go overseas. I know a lot of guys that went overseas, and I just kind of wasn't into like leaving and going way over to some foreign country to play basketball. And I was like, I'm just going to take my shot at football. And, it worked out. It worked out.
So where did you play college ball?
University of North Carolina.
Oh, wow. Okay. So yeah. When you were at UNC, how good were you guys? If you're talking about all those – really?
We won a national championship in 2005. Roy Williams' first national championship.
Oh, man. So yeah. You're talking about playing with such superstars. How much did you learn about that in college? Because, again, it doesn't show in your bio in Wikipedia that much about you in college basketball as much as, you're talking about your NFL career. Thinking about playing, winning a national championship is almost as big as winning a Super Bowl in so many aspects, and play with such amazing players. You said all these lottery picks. What did you learn in basketball and being a two-sport athlete? Because you kind of are like almost like a Deion in a way in college,
Yeah, I wouldn't compare myself to Deion. but I learned, the greatest thing that I learned was to be a well-rounded athlete. Because on one take, in football, I was adored, I was admired, I was needed, I was the man in all accounts. And then on football, it was more so of, hey, you have to do all the dirty work. And so you now have to guard Raymond Felton and Rashad McCann. These are lottery picks, right? And you now have to be on the scout team. You now have to help make these guys better. And you now become the second and third option on the football field. I was the number one option as a receiver at Carolina. So it was kind of like a give and take. But what it did was it helped me on both sides become a better practice player and a better game player. Because on the football side, I could yell at a guy who was on the practice squad to go harder because I knew that I put in the work of what it took for a starter. And on the other side, when I was, a backup, it let me know how hard I had to help that starter prepare. So it kind of gave me both aspects of it, how to watch film, how to look at little nuances when I'm when I'm, you know, if they go, hey, we're playing Duke this week, and you have to, you know, simulate what J.J. Redick does. So I have to go and study J.J. Redick and learn how he comes off screens, how he squares up, how he takes one dribble to the right and pull up jump shot, all his favorite moves. So then it helped me on the other side when I was going to watch film, how to break down different things on either side of the ball to make me a better player. So it was kind of like it was great because I had the best of both worlds.
I always, whenever I get an opportunity, like hearing you talk, well, one, I'm wondering like where you grew up, and you said that you kind of had, you know, you had a little bit of anger when you first started playing sports, and I'm wondering where that came from. And then as you moved through your career, the different coaches and the different leadership styles that you encountered, how did that shape you and develop you?
Yeah, I was, you know, born and raised in New Jersey, Roselle, New Jersey. And I was raised by my grandmother, myself and my two brothers. You know, we lived a very poor life. My grandmother made $30,000 a year. Didn't have a mom. My sensei didn't have a mom. My mom was alive, but she was a drug addict. My father was a drug dealer. And so, you know, didn't have that dynamic. So I spent a lot of the early portion of my life in the streets. So getting in and out of trouble, doing different things, you know, I tell people now, like, you know, as my athletic skills developed, like the kind of the OGs of the streets wouldn't let me kind of be on the Ave and do drugs. They didn't let me sell drugs, hang out. But what I did was we stole cars. So there was always an edge about me. There was always an edge. When you come up in the street, you have to have an edge about you, right? Because it's either kind of, you know, be a wolf or be, you know, food for a wolf. And so you develop an edge, you develop this level of toughness. And I think that's carried me. That's, you know, the negative aspect I turned into a positive, because being able to be tough, being able to be street smart, being able to be versatile in everything that I did, you know, all those things. And one of the greatest leader for me was my grandmother. She just was always hardworking and showed you just how to be solid. And again, I come from a time where there were principles, even in the street, there were still principles. There was still kind of, I guess, honor among thieves. There was still a code of ethic that you carried. And I've always carried that with me. And I've always been a person that's been dependable, that's been honorable, that's been admirable, that's going to do what I say I'm going to do. Sometimes that's good. Sometimes I'm bad. You know, my grandmother used to tell me at times, she would say, you know, always be a man of your word. And I was like, okay, cool. She's like, in everything. She goes, because if you say it, then you have to do it. So she goes, be very, very wise with your words. And she was like, even if you tell somebody you're going to smack the hell out of them, you have to now do it. Because what you don't want is for them ever to think that you're saying it and you're bluffing. So it's things like that. And that's a lesson that I've kept with me today. Not that I want to smack anybody, but just being a man of my word, right? So being very conscious and cautious about the things that I say, the promises that I make. Am I able to live up to those things? And being able to say, no, I can't do it. Yes, I can do it. I'll be there. I won't be there. Whatever that may be, you know, all those things have carried me through life, being a dependable teammate, knowing that I'm going to be in the foxhole with you, knowing that no matter what, no matter how I feel about you, no matter what you've done to me, if my job is to block this guy or run this route off or fill up this gap on kickoff, that I'm going to do it. You can set your watch to it that Jesse Holly is going to do what he said he's going to do, no matter how I feel, but because I made the commitment to do it. And that's something that I think is a quality that a lot of people don't have nowadays, but I just, you know, I do what I say I'm going to do, and I'm accountable, I'm reliable, and that right there is enough for me.
Wow. You know, and so that process, what you learned, how do you make sure when you've gone through your career and stuff that you didn't take some of the bad qualities that you learned that weren't really great growing to move forward in your life to not go fall back like some athletes have? What do you think? Yeah. It was mentoring. You think it's different people that you went through that really taught you some of the ways to work on not bringing back some of that? You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, for me, it's coming through life and having nothing, then getting something, then losing it, and then getting it back again. I know that life is far too valuable to just keep giving it away. I know that in my life that you don't get many opportunities to do what I did. All right. I go from a place where statistically I'm supposed to be dead or in jail, right? Raised by a single grandmother, less than $30,000. That's poverty. That's living in poverty. You know, you're not supposed to go to a Division I university, graduate with a degree in communication, and then be 1% of 1% and play 4.5 years in the National Football League. I understand that. There's enough people that's been around me that I've seen fail. I'm one of those people where I can look over there and go, you know what? I'm actually going to learn from your lesson. And if you said the stove was hot and I see the burn marks in your hand, guess what? I'm probably not going to touch it now, you know? And that's one of been the biggest thing. And I've seen lives being destroyed because of, just foolishness. And I realize that I have a lot to give to the world. And I have a platform through what I've done. And then of course, I don't know, this is, but my faith in, I even have my shirt on, my faith in Jesus Christ. It always is a reminder for me is that I'm here for a reason. And I tell this all the time to young people is my name is not just my name, right? When you say Jesse Holly, there are a bunch of other people who share that name. I have brothers, I have a mom, I have aunties, there's a bunch of people. And then on top of that, I have a bunch of people that go, that's my friend, that's my homeboy, that's my whatever. And the minute I do something wrong, those people now look like fools because a lot of people will come back and go, that's your boy, right? Then you think, weren't you the one to scream at the top of your lungs about Jesse Holly? Oh, look, he's arrested. So I take that with me every single day that my name is just not my name, that it has far greater meaning than just outside of, it has far greater meaning outside of just me.
And I'm going to go and I'm going to go to David, even though I'm not to the level you are as a brand, you know, you Google me, I'm out there so much. I sometimes forget about that. I forget. Yeah. I think I'm normal. You know, I'm a former professional wrestler, but I didn't have the Google ability that I have now with the celebrity interviews and just finding me all the way online everywhere. I kind of forget that, Jesse. And what recommendation you do that? Cause you know, you kind of forget that sometimes. You want to be normal and you walk around and then people Google you or look at you and then say, oh man. And then they see you differently. How do you
I never forget. I never forget. We live in a day and time now where everyone's watching me no matter where I go. And you never recognize it. You go into a store, right? I remember going into the grocery store and standing at the counter to get some lunch meat sliced. And I'm ordering my lunch meat and someone randomly walks up to me and go, I know that voice. And I look at him and I go, I don't know. He goes, no, I know that voice. And they're like, you're Jesse Holly. And I go, yeah, just randomly. So for me, I never, ever, ever forget that I'm always being watched. I never forget that, you know, what I do in the dark will come to light. And so, and that way for me, I try. And I'm not this perfect saint. I am far from perfect. I'm far from a saint. But I try to just do things right. If I do things right and I do things in an honorable manner, then no matter who's watching, the outcome will be good, right? And if I fall short of that, I fall short of that. But I am always in the mind frame of I'm not regular. I'm not. I know that I'm not. I haven't been regular for a very long time. I lived a large majority of my life in the public, and that's okay. But I'm always mindful of that. I'm always mindful of how I treat people. And it's not a front that I put on. This is who I am. And that part I'm okay with. I'm okay. One of the greatest qualities that I think that I have is I'm perfectly fine with being Jesse Holly in any atmosphere. Because you're going to get the same, whether I'm in a room full of doctors, I'm in a room full of celebrities, I'm in a room full of poor people, I'm in a room full of kids, I'm in a room full of old folks. I am going to be the exact same person every single time so that no one, you can never say that he was this or that. No. I'm perfectly fine with who I am and being who I am, and people either like it or they don't, and I'm perfectly okay with that as well.
I'm going to talk about, I was gaslit by a celebrity on Clubhouse, your social audio app. It's dying, but I'm trying to bring it back, and I always believe in humble because there's always somebody else that's going to humble you. So you have to always take that respect for everyone that you talk to and develop. In today's, I'm 6'10", so when I was a professional wrestler taking pictures with people and different things like that, I always learned, you know, you got to treat everyone with respect because it'll come back to you and you have to be that. And I don't understand the people with those egos. Like I could talk to celebrities, I've talked to their egos, but you're so awesome. Go ahead, David, with your question for Jesse.
No, it's funny. One of the things that Jesse, one of the things that you said was, you know, you came from nothing, you built, you got into the top 1%, you lost it, you came back. And that really made me think, one of the things that Neil and I just talked about the other day was, you know, this saying that I use in my book, I sign it when I sign my books, but it's be humble or be humbled. Yeah. And I feel like it's exactly what you were just saying. I mean, that's what it means to me. And I was just wondering if it rings true for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, in the Bible, it talks about, you know, pride comes before the fall, right? And so we can poke our chest out all we want. I believe that there's always been a higher power that's been guiding my life, and I don't deserve half the stuff that I have. Not even close. I haven't been a good enough human being to say that I live the life that I lived. I really haven't, you know, but I get a chance to do that every single day. I get a chance to say that I'm the only person in NFL history that's ever made the NFL off a reality TV show. No one else can say that. Like, how cool is that to say that I'm one of one in a league of 1%, right? And so I try to humble is a place where I come from. And I try not to ever forget that. I never forget what it felt like when I was an 8-year-old kid and didn't know where my next meal was going to come from. Right. And at the end of the day, like, no matter what I did, whether I was Cowboys or Patriots or Bengal or Tar Heel or whatever it is, I'm human. I'm a man just like everyone else. I cry, I bleed, I feel, yeah. I hurt, I love, I fail, I succeed. I just happen to do it you just happen to see mine, right? You just happen to see mine on display because of my profession. But I'm no different than the next man. And sometimes it can get away from you. It truly can get away from you when you have all the love and the adoration from people and they're telling you that you're greater than, you're the next best thing. You lose yourself in that sometimes.
Yeah, you need to mentor people like, you need to definitely mentor people like that, Jesse, that are on there, especially platforms like Clubhouse that think they're so bigger than life. And you, so let's talk about the reality show. I don't know that. I mean, I read it in the bio, but I didn't understand it. Explain why it was so big for you to do that reality show.
Well, at that particular time, I had been out of the NFL for about a year and a half. I was broke. I was poor. I was living on a friend's futon in Durham, North Carolina. I was working as a security guard from 11 at night to 7 in the morning. I would train from 7:30 to 9:30. Then I would go and work at T-Mobile, right, from 10 to 3 every single day. And just a sidebar, I said this the other day. One of the greatest things about that period of time in my story was – people don't even realize that I don't even talk about it much. But every Tuesday and Thursday during that time, that year and a half, almost 2 years, I volunteered for free at the YMCA. And I coached the basketball team of some underprivileged kids. And it was just not because I wanted to. I was tired, but I felt like that was my moment of giving back. Even in the most downhearted part of my life, my this is who I am. I wanted to go and to give what knowledge and influence that I may have had over those kids. And give it back to him. And I did that for a year and a half. And then I got this random call one night from the public relations person at the University of North Carolina, a guy by the name of Kevin Best. And I had been 2 years removed from school. And he just called. He said, "Hey, Jess, these people called me about this reality show that they're making up. I don't know much about it, but I wanted to call you to tell you that I gave them your name and number. So be looking for a call." And I looked for a call, and these guys called me a couple of days later. They couldn't tell me much about it, but there was this reality team that they were putting on, and they were looking for guys who had the charisma to be in front of the camera, but the skills to play on Sunday. And I went through this whole gambit, and we don't have time for that. That's a whole nother conversation. But I ended up being on this reality TV show with 6 wide receivers and 6 DBs, and we battled it out. It was a show by Michael Irvin, called Fourth and Long with Michael Irvin. And the winner of this show got a chance to be to get a training camp roster spot for the Dallas Cowboys. And you go on this show, we shot for 2 months, and I ended up winning this show. After I win the show, the producer's actually, his name is Jesse. Funny part, the producer's name is Jesse, and we share the same birthday.
Wow.
And he goes, and he tells me, he goes, "I don't think you realize what you've just done." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, remember, I had to fill out an application and fax it in." Like, this is how old it was, right? There wasn't no scanning email. I had to fax it in. And he says, we sent over 100,000 out. He said, I had to do an audition in Orlando. He said, between Orlando, Dallas, Ohio, and two in California, we auditioned over 20,000 people. Out of that 20,000, we picked 50. Out of that 50, we picked 12. Out of that 12, there was only one winner, and that was you. And so I get to Dallas, and I don't get my playbook until the day I get to training camp. And normally that's dead man walking, right? And that time where, you know, they were cutting every couple of weeks. There was only 80 men. It's 90 men now. And I ended up being out of football for 2 years, being poor, getting on training camp, and making the practice squad that year, where I made $100,000, right, in 16 weeks. And then I had two more years on the active roster for the Cowboys. So, you know, I've been at the pits in the valley a lot.
All right.
But I've also been at the mountaintop.
All right, so David, I have to jump into the podcast because that's why he's on here. So basically, why podcasting? You said you're doing four podcasts now. So
yeah.
Let's talk just about the Believe one real quick. Give us upset what's happened there.
Yeah. You know, this is the wave, right? Things now, you know, we're probably relatively all somewhere close in age. So, you know, when we came up, it was either like
radio show, which I still radio have. Radio. I still have, this is on radio as well, man. So this is not podcasting. Right. I'm a hybrid and television, but go ahead.
Right. Yeah. So that's what it was. It was like, either you did like AM FM radio or you did some sort of big network TV, and there was no in between there. Right. So it was like, everyone was fighting for one of those two spots. Well, unlike athletics, you know, after a certain time, even if you play 20 years, you got to stop playing. The body just won't let you. But radio, I mean, guys do radio until they're 80 years old. They just don't quit. And same thing in TV. And then, you know, when this podcast thing came around, it kind of gave you an opportunity to kind of be, you know, more without the big networks and kind of just do your own thing, not censor as much with the FCC and so on and so forth. And to be honest with you, this is kind of the maybe not so humble thing is I'm really good at what I do. Like, I'm really good at what I do. I think I'm an excellent storyteller, which is key. And I think I'm able to break the game down and give it to fans who may not be as familiar with football as, you know, an advanced person. I think I present the game to them in a way that they can, is digestible. And I make the complexity of the game simple. And so I love doing it. It's fun work. It's hard work, but it's easy work in the day. And to be honest with you, people pay me to talk about football. It's what you and I would do over, you know, over a glass of lemonade at the barbershop or,
exactly,
you know, anywhere. And I'm like, they're going to pay me for it. Sure. Absolutely.
All right. So we can check out the podcast of Believe. What is the name of the podcast in Believe?
It's called Believe Cowboys with Jesse Holly.
And then you have other, three other podcasts. Where can people find information on all of them? Where can they go?
So I'm starting my own podcast called Unfiltered with Jesse Holly. I have another podcast that I do, A to Z Sports, which I do the pre halftime and post game show with another guy named Will Steele on A2ZATOZ Sports Dallas. And then I work for DallasCowboys.com, where I do a weekly podcast with three-time Super Bowl champion Nate Newton and a guy by the name of Shannon Gross and a writer named Kurt Daniels called Hanging with the Boys on DallasCowboys.com.
Go figure. I leave Texas, and now I know you. I'm one client. I lived in Dallas for 2 years and never saw Sean Stasiak. He's a former WWE star, and we were friends, and we never met. And now I have a connection in Dallas, but I'll be back to Dallas. Trust me, brother.
Come on, we appreciate barbecue with me.
Oh, yeah. Or you might be at Radio Row with me in Vegas. So sounds good, bro. Okay.
Absolutely.
And you get to meet the media giant. Good talking, man. Appreciate it, Jesse.
God bless you guys. Thank you.
All right. You're listening and watching The Neil Haley Show. We'll be back in just a moment.